You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 168, A Stocking Stuffed with Articles.
Episode 168 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December the 14th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my Grammy-nominated brother, James Furlough.
What was I nominated for, and which one's the Grammy? That's music, right?
Grammys is the music, and you were nominated for your spoken word album.
Boom.
Yeah, which...
Let's drop some beats.
What?
I was dropping some beats.
Heck yeah. No, a spoken word is where you read an album. So pretty much everybody who's ever won an EGOT has got... That's where their Emmy comes... Or their Grammy comes from. Because you get your Tony.
A spoken album?
Yeah, yeah. Because it's like... It's basically you read a book. And they give Emmys out for that. Or Grammys. What are we talking about?
Like, so like audiobook readers, they can win an award.
Exactly. Yeah,
I'm in.
All the presidents that have ever gotten one, whether it's Vice President, what's his name, with the movie about the end of the world and global warming, Al Gore or Obama or Hillary Clinton, they all get theirs. They've all got Grammys because they have books that they read.
Okay, well, it sounds like you got to become a world leader. Then,
well, no, because the whole idea of an EGOT is that you get a Grammy, Tony, Oscar, EGOT, and an Emmy, so you get one
what,
of all
an
four.
EGOT?
What?
That's an acronym for.
Yeah, Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony. So you do TV, movie, music, and theoretically music, and and a stage production, and pretty much everybody who's won one has gotten their Grammy for spoken word. It's just sort of like,
I understand what you're saying now. Gotcha.
It's like the guys that used to pitch fastballs to Barry Bonds.
Barry Bonds.
Yeah. You know, just helping him out a bit. You're
gotcha.
Good enough.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So
spoken word.
Grammy nominations.
I'll take
the Grammy. I'm having such a hard time with this. Grammy nominations came out this week, where we annually decide what good music is and what bad music is. Definitively.
Do you agree this year? Did you pay attention? You like?
All the bands that I saw last night at a concert got their Grammys last year. So what do I care?
All right. There you go. You're just a year behind. That's cool.
I know. So I was very happy to hear there was only like two songs of like your major categories that I wasn't aware of, which means that I'm plugged into pop culture and I can have cool conversations with kids.
So that's cool.
Yeah. I feel good about this, James. Let me revel a bit.
So I was picking up a team of people who were they were abroad for the last couple weeks. They were in Uganda. And they were driving back, and they're like, "So, James, anything like happened in the world?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm sure stuff has happened. Weather's been kind of crazy, from what I understand." But then it was like they started quizzing me about all this football stuff, and I was like, "I have no idea, no clue."
Yeah,
it was pretty funny. I was like, I must have went like 10 or 15 questions in a row where I was like, "Oh, I don't know."
How many?
What good are you? Like, I'm sorry.
That just blows my mind sometimes. Like, this stuff is important. It's not important. I just don't have enough important things going on in my life.
When it comes to tech news, I'm in the know.
It's true.
I was like, it's true. Dude, Lending Club is kind of a thing. It's kind of awesome. So
yeah, I guess in general purpose football stuff, if it doesn't have to do with the Niners, I'm not paying attention. And nowadays, I do my best to not pay attention to the Niners either. But,
yeah, well,
you know. Such is life.
Well, same with the Beavers. Though the Ducks are doing fairly well.
Yeah,
I understand.
Right? I have an SEU in. Anyways, James, you know what we're not here to talk about? other cultural events. We're here to talk about the one thing we do pay attention to.
Yes.
Which is, so this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he's got to throw our way.
I work for Hewlett-Packard, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That is good to know.
It's important to know.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, that's right, the next part. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're all up in the social media world. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is NextWiggin4, which, let's be honest, that's probably where you're going to follow me because Instagram passed Twitter this week. It's official. Ding, 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 ding,
it's
ding,
true.
Ding, ding. Twitter's lame. That's what that means.
I don't know if I'd quite go that far, but yeah.
James, if you're not first, you're last. It doesn't even make sense, Ricky Bobby.
It's too true.
There's all sorts of other places. There's second place. There's third place. There's fourth place.
No, it's just first last, second last, third last. It's easy. I was talking to someone about that, and I mean, I can be a little competitive. I will admit, and
I never noticed.
I'm sure you never did. Man, what was it? We did something, and I didn't win, or my team didn't win, or something. And I was just like, man, this is a whole lot less fun when you don't win. And it was like it wasn't supposed to be a competitive thing per se. I mean. Oh, I wish I could remember the exact situation because it would be that much better.
I gotta say, this is a really interesting story.
I know. But it's just that idea that, second place is not acceptable as much as I'd like to pretend that it's okay. Yeah.
Sorry, go.
No. You just enjoy beating other people? Is that it?
I just find my joy in playing the game and the competitive spirit and just, you know, doing it that way.
Look, I enjoy that too. I happen to enjoy it a lot more when I also win. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm not going to play if I lose. I'm just saying I don't like it as much. That's all.
I enjoy the feeling.
You're allowed to have that, right?
Yeah.
It's like saying
I enjoy the feeling of control. I like to lose on purpose if I'm going to lose, and lose in interesting and compelling ways. That's because oftentimes I find that I don't necessarily play games unless I can win decisively. But other people don't enjoy that, so then I get to go and lose. It's like Monopoly. It's a talent to be able to lose by a little, or lose in a time frame where everybody's still interested in the game. Things along those lines. That's a challenging thing to be able to do, and to walk away having everybody feel great about themselves because they did so good, and me knowing the truth makes me feel very good.
Yeah, and that's what I'll tell people is I have to change the nature of the competition, what we're actually playing,
exactly.
So that you get things like that. Yeah, no, I'm totally.
I'm playing a different game than you, and I won.
Yeah.
A lame way to go through life sometimes.
sometimes. Though it is sometimes also fun to win the game you're both playing.
Don't
get me wrong. But, so on that note, I'm trying to think of a creative transition and I can't. You can follow me at James Furlow on Twitter, at jamesfurlow.com, and elsewhere. My name is there.
I like it.
There was no transition. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And, it's all right. Hey, if you want to see the rest of what we do specifically regarding this show, we've got a cool little website you can go to. It's called furloughbros.com or furloughbrothers.com. Take your pick. There, you will discover things like links to the podcast that you're listening to or links to the YouTube that you're watching. But you'll also find links to all the articles that we talk about throughout the week, which this week's going to be a lot. Feel free to go there, check them out. Basically, it's a great resource.
Impress your friends. Be hip and in the news.
No. But yes, that too.
So,
yeah. All right, you're going to kick it off. This is kind of going to go like you get like 4 or 5 in a row, and then I get like 4 or 5 in a row because we didn't do a good job of mixing them. But the general premise here is it's mostly my fault. I had a lot of articles this week that I thought were very interesting and could not choose, so I'm not. And so we're going to talk about everything. We're just literally going to run through our list. And so this will kind of give you a flavor for kind of how weeks normally work, where normally we do a good job of picking half a dozen or so. We're not going to today. We're picking them all. And don't worry, this is not a six-hour show. We'll still keep it within the two-hour ballpark.
This is what happens when we can only distill it down to the important 1%, not the important 0.1% of the articles. Yeah. Anyways, so let's get going. So this week was a cool week for virtual reality. Cool. Your first current generation of virtual reality hardware was launched this week with Samsung using their traditional strategy of being first to market, not caring really whether it's good or not. The good part is it sounds like it works pretty well. Not a lot of raving reviews, but not a lot of I'm throwing up all over the place after 5 minute reviews either.
What are some of the things that you can do with it? Like, is it just watch movies, play video games?
Yeah. So, effectively, what it is just the idea where they're like hardware. You basically put a Galaxy Note 3 into it, and then it turns into this. The hardware that goes on your face has a spot for the phone to go.
That's expected.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And yes. And so, you know, it effectively, and then you load it up with the cool software, and then you can go for it. And one of the things you said is all apps are free on the Gear VR at launch, and, you know, trying to make sure that there is, you know, which comes first, chicken or the egg. They both come at the same time. Basically, Samsung says their goals at this first version of VR is to get feedback on whether or not they like it. They claim they're not trying to sell a million. They're not trying to, turn this into a new business on this round. It's just sort of a antithesis of the Apple strategy, which is every new launch has got to be a hit. These guys are like, no, we don't expect it to sell well at all. We just want to know that the people who do buy it think it's awesome and use it a lot. Do the people who bought it like it? We don't even really care how many we sell. It's about, do the people who bought it like it? Jeez, can we get it a little more repetitive? Is it comfortable? Do they feel like it's compelling? Is it something they're showing their friends? A very important point that we talk about sometimes with, you know, technology catching on and whatnot. And that's really the key goal from this learning.
Customer feedback studies where it's all about... I can't remember what it's called. It has like an official name, but essentially you gauge how well your product's doing by asking people, would you recommend this to a friend? And your whole goal is to maximize that score. Cause the idea is if we're doing it right, you'll tell people about it. And, the net promoter score, that's what that's called. And, I just pulled that one right out. And so that's that idea is this something they're showing your friends, if you're not doing a good job. Yeah, we'll see how that works, right? That was kind of Google's strategy with Google Glass. But, you know, and I would say there's nothing wrong with that strategy. It's more of a can you actually hold to it? You know what I mean? It's one thing to come out and say that. It's another to live it. And because you know they've got internal goals and they're like, we think we should sell these many. And they're evaluating sales numbers even though they're not saying it. But anyways,
yeah,
that's what you do. Heck, you got to make production estimates. So somewhere along the lines, you made a guess at how many you thought you'd sell.
It's true. Yeah, they said the gauge of success is about to.
So how do you measure success?
What?
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead. Go.
Quiet. The gauge of success is about did people who bought it like it, and did they not return 100% of them? It's as simple as that. So that sounds like their measure of success. We'll make them. We may not sell all of them, but the people who bought them, did they return them?
All right.
This is being called the Innovators Edition, which is kind of their way of saying it's the beta version of it.
Exploration. Yeah.
So, and it sounds like the launch apps games as of December 8th, 2014. There's a lot of crossover with Oculus style apps. So 360 video, 360 photos, Hero Bound, stuff like that. So, you know, there's a pretty good list, and it'll be interesting to see what comes of it. I'm not expecting a lot from it. I'm just glad that it's kind of happening as a holistic movement forward. So that's cool.
So did you order one?
Seems like a big deal. Do what?
Do you order one?
No, I don't have a Galaxy Note 2. Those are expensive.
I know you're in the VR. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I've already picked my horse that I'm gonna be latching on to this one, man. I bought the PlayStation 4. This is kind of cool though. So at Sundance, the movie festival, they got all sorts of artsy fartsy type stuff. If you're into that sort of thing, Fern films and whatnot.
Which you are? Would you ever go to that?
I've never gone to it. Have you?
I know, but would you? If you had an opportunity to, would you?
Heck yeah.
Okay, that's. I'm sorry. All right.
I make fun of it, but it's kind of because I'm. It's more because I'm jealous than anything.
Hello.
About what, like, James, are you there?
Now you're back. Okay.
So one of the things that they asked that...
Yeah, I kind of, like, walking into it, I knew that it was going to be a slow day. Or something's up with my computer today, so sorry. I seem to be, like, on top of you. But that's okay.
That's all right. So Sundance, they had this cool film thing that they wanted, film experiment that they wanted to do, where these a couple of different filmmakers made virtual reality films. Things like one where you could go into a room and see sort of this party virtual reality, so you'd be in the room and be able to watch as it happened. And then there was another one they called Project Syria, where they basically it recreates scenes from the war-ravaged country so that you can explore them on your own terms, and stuff like that. So, you know, it was not a huge, you know, you're not talking full-length feature films, but artists are already starting to take a look at the technology and ask the question, how can we tell compelling and interesting stories using virtual reality, put you there in the film. I feel like a movie of being in a party. Like, have you ever been in a party when something really, like, dramatic and awkward happens?
Do you have an example?
Oh, I don't know.
Because maybe. I don't know. Nah, I'm going to say no. Because I don't go to that cool of parties. I don't really go to parties. Other than, like... I will go to get-togethers where dessert is served. Does that count?
Yeah, well, if awkward drama happens, it's one of your classic TV show scenarios where, like, you know, everybody's there and then a couple start to argue with each other and everybody's like,
not in real life, but I know what you're talking about now.
Not in real life. Well, I could tell you this. One of the only, like, in TV shows, the sweet escape is the fact that you're sitting in your living room. At real parties, the sweet escape is that you can, like, leave and just walk away. I feel like being stuck in the room, locked into the frame of reference that the director wants you to be in, sounds horrifying. Like, that honestly sounds worse than being trapped in space. oh my gosh, do not put me in that situation without the ability to leave, because that's just horrifying, watching two other people like argue and especially without any ability to change the situation, you know, like just have to watch. Why would you do that to yourself? I could see why people would go, though. That would be pretty compelling. But
huh. All right.
Yeah.
Virtual reality, it's a thing.
Exactly.
Well, while we're sticking on the entertainment bent, so Apple's come out with their best of 2014 most popular apps and games and music. Most popular iPad app, surprise, surprise, Pixelmator. Boom. Which is, I haven't used the iPad app, but the Mac app is absolutely fantastic. It's worth every single penny. They could charge twice as much, maybe even three times as much, and I would still pay it. It's that good. And if I had an iPad, I would have Pixelmator on iPad, too. It's fantastic. Let's see here. The game of the year, or no, sorry, the iPhone app of the year, we'll skip the game stuff, is Elevate Brain Training. Ever played it? Used it?
No, but this is interesting. They do big rankings of people, like they because you get, you're able to get all sorts of information about people from like you know, where they are and stuff. And so they actually have gone through and ranked colleges based on best performances by people who attended that specific college. And my college came in top 10, so that made me feel smart.
Wait, this Elevate Brain Training thing did?
Yeah, they ranked the smartest colleges and universities.
Huh, interesting. Okay, All right. Let's see here, music. Do you want to take a guess who the best artist is?
If you haven't. Oh, jeez. Taylor Swift. Already.
No. What? She got best album for 1989.
No, of course she did.
But best artist.
Best artist, I don't know.
Beyonce.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, and especially her best movie. iTunes loved her because she did her like singular launch on iTunes this year. That was a, it was that big deal where it didn't launch on anything else.
Yep. How about best movie? Best blockbuster. Let's start with that.
Oh, there was only one this year that qualifies for that. That's Guardians of the Galaxy. That was your big winner so far.
That's right. How about best family movie? I'll give you a clue. It's awesome.
I have no idea.
It's everything about this movie is awesome.
Oh, Lego, of course.
There we go. Let's see, next year, even though it's coming out in December, it will be... Wait, no, it won't be on iTunes. Never mind. In 2016, it will be Star Wars.
Right?
Next year will probably be, I don't know. I was thinking The Hobbit, but we'll see. I'm seeing that Friday, by the way. Let's see. Yeah. Television, TV show of the year.
TV show of the year. Breaking Bad. Is that this year? Does that qualify?
Apparently not. Fargo.
Fargo? Oh, yeah. Okay. I can see that.
I haven't seen it. I hear it's good.
True
Detective
too.
Was also up there with best performances. Let's see here. Best classic podcast.
Fruity Bros Tech Podcast.
Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Huh.
I don't know. You know what you need to listen to? I'm just saying that you need to do it. And I'm recommending everybody do it because it's fantastic. It's a podcast called Startup. It's actually a miniseries. It's only like 9 episodes long. It's super meta. So the guy, I think it's Michael Bloomberg. Is that his name?
Yeah.
He did the podcast of This American Life and then was also a co-founder or co-host, I guess, of Planet Money, and which are both public radio shows. He decided to go off and start up his own podcasting company. And so he did a podcast, which is essentially a documentary, of his attempt to start up a podcast company.
So,
in his very first episode, I know it's very meta, In his first episode, he recorded how he pitched his idea to a billionaire VC. And I'll give you the quick spoiler. He did horrible and recorded the entire thing. And you listen to it and go, wow. And in retrospect, he's like, yeah, this is bad. He goes, I sound horrible. But anyways, I recommend check that one out. And then in terms of books, the favorite fiction book was All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr.
What's that
and
about?
Nonfiction was, I have no idea. Click and find out. And then the nonfiction one was The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace by Jeff Hobbs.
Mm.
Anyways, there's the start of your yearly list. We'll have more coming, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, Lending Club. So the next thing that happened, I feel like I should be writing notes on these things. Oh, well. let me write down Lending Club real quick. So Lending Club went public this week.
Nice. Which one's that one?
Did you know that? That's the one. It's a peer-to-peer lending. So and you just go to lendingclub.com, lendingclub.com. So it's peer-to-peer. So the way it works is, you know, you want a car loan or a small business loan or here, let me see here. What's it for? Credit card refinancing, debt consolidation, home improvement, major purchase, home buying, car financing, green loan, business, vacation, moving and relocation, medical expenses, other. And let's see here. Does it give you an option for how much you can ask for? But essentially, what they do is you can go in and you can ask for a loan. And then what happens is it's very similar to Kiva, where you ask for the loan and then they put the loan out there. So let's say that you ask for a $1,000 credit card consolidation loan, okay? And mm-hmm. they run your credit report and stuff, and they say, like, this guy's got average credit. And they go, and so his interest rate is going to be at, I don't know what an average, we'll just say 10%, okay? That sounds wicked high, but whatever, we'll go with it. 10%, okay? And then what'll happen is other individuals, peers, regular human beings, non-accredited investors, you know, will come together and you'll have someone like, let's say you ask for that loan. I might see that and go, oh, 10% interest rate. That's pretty cool. Here, I'll loan him $50 of his $1,000.
Nice.
Okay. And then there may be 2,000, am I doing my math right? 200 people out there who say the same thing. All right. Yeah, sure. Looking at his credit score and the interest rate they're charging, totally worth the risk for what he's using it for. And so, you know, if you crowdfund it, essentially, you get the loan. And then you they give you the money, and then you pay it back, and it, you know, splits it out to all the individual people plus the interest. So so that's kind of how that works. Now, you might have it, let's say your credit score was horrible, right? Poor, below 600. They might say, well, your loan is 20%, something like that. So now what's interesting about this is you as the lender are like, poor credit score, but the possibility of a really high return of 20%.
Mm-hmm. We'll break his legs.
So you still might have people who decide to go for it, and they might go, you know what, he may only pay back half of his loan, but gosh, that's still a 10% return. And so, you know what I mean? So there's all these dynamics that play a role in it. And there's a few personal finance bloggers out there. They've actually shown, like, it's actually to your advantage to lend to the poor credit people because they tend to pay back the majority of their loans at higher interest rates. Like, so your overall return is actually higher.
Weird.
But you're like, wow, that's really counterintuitive. And, yeah, so... So that's how, right? And I mean, that's what's fun about personal bloggers is they sit down and they do, or personal finance bloggers is they'll sit down and do all that math and figure it out. And be like, yeah, this is actually worth it, and I'm helping the, you know, the person who needs help. So, so that's the idea. So you can borrow. It's some crazy amounts of money, right? You can like do like $100,000 or something like that.
I want to
do a lot. So far, they have funded, let's see here, that's $100,000, $6.2 billion so far. is what they've lended. And they have paid a little under $600 million of interest to their investors. And all, so here, and LendingClub, I mean, they got the brilliant business model. Because all they'll do is they say, okay, we're going to give you a loan, and then we're just going to charge you a little fee on top. And so they might charge you, you know, I don't know, $50 for that loan. LendingClub gets $50. Okay, they're done. No risk on their end.
Wow.
And then these investors, they get the full percent. And their only costs are managing this whole process. So LendingClub, guaranteed payment because they get paid up front. And then everyone else is the people who are taking the risk. And so what happens is, let's say, let's do it the opposite, right? You're an investor. You've got $1,000. And you might say, I'm going to give my money in $50 increments to 200 different borrowers. And so your risk is also diversified across people and across rating types and potentially across different types of loans. So you might have one for a car loan, one for debt consolidation, one for a home, one for a vacation. You know, just you've got it all across the board. And so, sure, someone doesn't pay, no big deal. You got all these others. So you're also diversified. So that's LendingClub. They went public and they tried to raise $1 billion. I think they were just underneath it. I can't remember the exact. Here it was. It was $870 million. They were priced at $15 a share. Let's see where they're at today. As of this moment. This magic moment. You want to know what's really lame, though? Let's see here. LendingClub. They're at $24.75. right now. So had you gotten in, you'd be doing pretty well. So what's really lame is that Oregon has some very strict investor rules. And so I cannot actually lend money out to people in Oregon. I can borrow.
Really?
But I'm not allowed to be on the investor side of it living in Oregon.
That's cool.
California is different. Yeah, what's also very interesting about this is that they actually have a secondary market as well, where you can buy and sell already existing notes. So, like, for example, let's say that you loaned out your $1,000, okay? Yeah. And you've been getting a return and people have been paying it back. You might go, oh, you know what? I want to go on vacation myself. I want my $1,000 back. You can then essentially say, here are these loan pieces that I have. I'd like to sell them to someone else.
Whoa.
So you could either sell them. I don't know if it's at face value or a little under that. It kind of depends on the payback rate, I'm sure. And so you can, in theory, get out. You're not stuck until that last person pays you back. And so they even have this secondary market that goes on. Places like Texas, you cannot be an originator on the note. You can't do, like, you can't make that initial investment, but you can buy and sell on that secondary market within LendingClub. And in Oregon, you can't even do that. It's just like, no, you can borrow money, and that's all. We believe in the consumption model, not the investor model. It's really annoying.
That is really annoying. So does this, like, really mess with your taxes?
No, I'm sure that they give you a form that, it can't be. They've got it all figured out and quantified, where essentially you, it's just like when you own a stock, essentially, and they pay back a dividend. You know, it's just how much money.
Capital gains.
You know, that's easy, man. Yeah, yeah. And so I'm sure that they give you a whatever that, you know, combination of numbers is, form, you know, schedule, something or other, just to tell you what it is.
Huh.
They got that solved.
This could be kind
of
fun.
Awesome. No, I was seriously, I was of like the mindset of, because I read about it and learned about it, and I had a friend who he was like, I want to try this, and I want to try it with someone just to, you know, to learn together. And I was going to be like, yeah, sure, I'll throw $5,000 into it to learn how it works. And that was when I learned I could not. It was a sad day in my life.
Huh. Well, but, you know, maybe I'll take one for the team.
Dude, you should do it. You should get in it, man. Oh, I'd love to learn vicariously through you. That'd be so cool. I will lend you a wit. I will. We'll talk about this offline in case any regulars
I will gift you money under the taxable quantity. Yes.
As long as you... It is under the understanding that you gift me back whatever I gift you plus interest that you earn.
Hey,
And you give me your username and password, but... yeah, fun. And don't worry, whatever you owe in taxes, I'll, I'll give you two. You know, we'll
all right. I appreciate that. That's crazy. You're so kind.
We're not going to do that. But anyways, Lending Club, pretty cool. I would love to. I could be an investor in Lending Club, I suppose, since now they're a publicly traded company.
That's true.
I could do that.
And they're the.
And in a little bit, I'll talk to you about a way that I could make that happen. Now,
you know what's really irritating? Oh wait, you're about to talk about that, aren't you? I won't.
No.
What? I won't steal it from you then.
Okay, we'll talk about it later.
I'm assuming you're about to talk about the man with the amazing arrow ability.
With the tights. Okay. Yes.
All right, cool. Then I won't, because I was literally about to bring that up. Because I was very excited.
We'll do it later.
To have my excitement snatched from me.
Okay, next article. Facebook is bringing Graph Search to mobile. They've had it on their website for a while. That really the only interesting thing about this is the fact that for a company that says they're a mobile-first company, it really took a while for them to bring this to mobile after they brought it to the web. But what that means is now you'll be able to search on your phone, just like a regular search thing. Also kind of related to that is they're getting rid of Bing, which I think is interesting. It's kind of like, we're publicly traded. We don't have to play nice with Microsoft anymore. We're going to do our own thing. Sweet. Oh, I love the Opera.
Yeah, that's the really interesting part because they finally can get rid of it, and you know they've hated it forever. Because the reality of it is they don't, you know, it's not like they're going to go to Google. They're going to do their own search algorithm. They're going to try to be.
Oh yeah.
Their hope, I'm sure, is in 5 years to be able to announce that they've stolen, that they're bigger than Yahoo, Bing, everybody else, and that they're stealing, you know, Google.
They probably already are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it depends if you include when you search for a friend's name or not.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Google includes that. So why can't Facebook? I'm gonna get a lot of credit for those cute girls that I like give friends. Oh, let's take out those photos.
Yeah.
Life of a
Okay, I still got more and then it's your turn for a little bit. Okay, last one for now for me. Microsoft Windows exec dude, Kevin Turner. Let's see, he's the chief operating officer. He was given a speech this week. I think it was this week. And it was pretty fascinating. So he was saying essentially his big takeaways. He goes, we need to figure out how to monetize Windows differently than how we've done it in the past. So the way we've done it in the past is, you know, you or the equipment manufacturer, like say HP, just throw out a random one, pays Microsoft a licensing fee for that Windows software, and they get that one-time fee and then they're good to go. And so he was saying we need to change that. And I guess they've already done some of those things. Like if you have a screen that is 9 inches or less, they actually waive their fee altogether. And so that has enabled a new wave of notebooks. And apparently HP has one out there that's like $200, you know, $199. That from what I understand, for the price, they go, it's actually fantastic. And they're actually saying like, I'd get that over a Chromebook because you get full-on Windows 8 for a similarly spec'd-out machine, and it's the same price. And so, I was actually...
And guess what? Really it runs Chrome OS.
Yeah, I know, right? And they were saying it actually runs it better than the regular Chrome OS because it has all the plugins and everything that's needed. I thought that was very interesting. You know, they were like, you're not going to do Photoshop on it, but... you could do anything else. And they said they've made sure to optimize it for Office. So it actually, like, it runs Excel and Word and PowerPoint and Outlook very, very well. It was a shockingly glowing review of a very low-end notebook. So anyways, check that out too. But essentially what this guy was saying is he says the plan is to monetize the lifetime of that customer through services and different add-ons that they're going to incorporate with the solution. So the idea might be very similar to Apple. We're going to give away Windows, but there might be a recurring monthly or annual thing to go along with it. Oh, you wanted, like, it to connect to the internet? Sure, there's a price for that. I'm sure it won't be like that. But I would not be surprised if it was something like, oh, you want Skype integrated or security or, you know what I mean? There's something, oh, you want security backup into the cloud. Let's see here. Don't upgrade now. Oh, boy. All right. But yeah, so anyway, so Windows 10 might have a different pricing. It'll be interesting. They said they're not going to use it as loss leader per se, but it's going to be priced differently.
Huh. That'll which be interesting. Which will
be another big bet for the company.
They got to do something because their long-term strategy, they're fighting a bunch against a bunch of free operating systems. And, you know, it's hard to do when you launch things like Windows 8 or Windows Vista. All right, so it's my turn. So you use Google Maps much?
All the time. Not on my phone, but on my PC. I gotta figure out how to get this thing to stop dinging.
So Wired Magazine did a pretty interesting article I thought this week. It's worth checking out. Basically detailing how Google Maps is made. Because it's not super straightforward, and Google has always been very, very protective of information regarding how the magic happens. One of the things that's really interesting is they've never been totally honest about the workforce that works on Google Maps. I'm sure if you need to know and you work high enough with an Apple, you can find out. But, you know, a competitor, for example. But for the most part, they're very, very, very discreet about how many people work for them and what they do. And part of that is because, you know, obviously there's an army of people driving around in those Google Street View cars taking photos of everything. But there's a lot more involved than that. And one of the things that I actually tend to use the Google Maps map more than the Apple Maps, even though I find their traffic conditions to be almost identical, because at this point so much of the information is being routed through Waze for them to calculate that, it ends up being pretty similar for all three. You might get some variations in like what routes to take and stuff, but for the most part, that it's accurate in all cases. But one of the things that Google Maps does that nobody else does, and I've become entirely dependent on as I more and more can't actually drive at all without a GPS going, is telling you what lane to be in. You know, they'll actually, as you come up to a turn, right, they'll tell you, do you want to be in the middle lane to turn left, or do you want to be in the left lane to turn left? Which is really useful, like really useful to know ahead of time. And to get that kind of information isn't really very easy, though, it turns out. And they need to do a number of different things, like they need to use a lot of the satellite data, obviously, is where they get where the roads are exactly. They get a lot of stuff from Street View, but then they go through and they actually use the Street View to find stuff. So they look for like business logos, street names and information boards, traffic restrictions, major divided roads, minor roads. So if you've ever like driven where there's one-way streets and never asked, I wonder how Google knows. Part of it is they got these, like, they go through Street View stuff, and just they're looking at all the signage and everything. And so they know where stop signs are. They know where one-way roads are. And they're able to input all of that data. They get thousands and thousands and thousands of reports of bugs and stuff daily that they go through, and they have to review all that information. And the nice part about the Street View stuff is that it gives them like on the ground data, but they've just got this army of employees that are all about going in and correcting that information. I don't know. It's just interesting. They've got this app or this application that is sort of like the God app for Google Maps, that has just a tremendous amount more data on it, and signage information, and all of these, like, all these different metadata points and stuff that Google uses to find that Google uses to find and basically when they generate a map, a route for you, they generate that using all this other excess information that you can't actually access as a third party user. And so they, for the first time ever, they've actually talked about this app, and this application that they've gotten, and it's called the it's the Atlant. No, where is it? It's called the Almanac, I think, is what they called it, or something like that, or the or Atlas. Yeah, it's Atlas. That's what it's called. Which, you know, makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that's really interesting about it is, you know, you think about these you know, these projects that Google works on, and they're all about artificial intelligence and everything's all super highly automated, but Google Maps is very much a departure from that. There's just a tremendous amount of human labor involved in making them as super accurate and information intensive as they are. And you know, they brute force it, basically, is their solution. And you know, it's just it's an impressive thing that they're doing, but so
that's quite the Herculean effort.
Yeah. So do you ever eat at TGA Fridays?
Nope.
Okay, you're lucky. I have so TGI Fridays does this. They got this deal. It's ridiculous. Where they will do unlimited hors d'oeuvres, so you can go and order unlimited hors d'oeuvres, and it's like $10 a person to be able to do this. So me and one of our cousins went once, and we're very excited about this because we're thinking just like you're sort of like, you know, mozzarella sticks, onion rings, some French fries, maybe some chips, and maybe like a chicken tender or two, just like nosh on that and have a couple of beers for hours. And we went there, and it was terrible. It was like the worst thing ever. And we were like, "Ooh, it's like, you know, TGI Fridays. Nobody ever goes to TGI Fridays. Why doesn't anybody ever go to TGI Fridays?" And then we went, and we're just like, "Oh yeah, that's right, because the service is terrible, and their food is kind of gross." And like, we were hoping for like gross appetizer food, but that's not what it was. It was like, cheese sticks trying to be fancy cheese sticks, but they're cheese sticks, so they were just disappointing. And like, we got like two. Our unlimited cheese sticks was like two. We were there for like 2.5 hours, and we got like two servings. It was just out of control. Oh my gosh, it was so annoying. And we were just like, why did we do this? This is such a. It was like a bad idea, poorly executed. That's awful. But anyways, turns out they've gone it. They've upped their game of awfulness. Hopefully none of their lawyers listen to us. And they have they've started attacking people with bladed drones. For this promotion thing, they decided to tie a not a gun to a drone, as James and I have advocated, but a mistletoe. And they would fly it over people, and then they get a kiss. Well, they had like reporters and media there checking that out because, you know, they got to do something to try to fool people into coming into their stores. And they accidentally bumped one of the reporters, and the reporter like bounced back because, you know, it's a flying drone. And when they bounced back, they knocked it into the head of another reporter and like drew blood. Just
whoa.
Yeah, it did not go well.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Not good.
I mean, if their goal is to get their names talked on shows like us, so you go, oh, yeah, TGI Fridays, then, you know, good job. If your goal was to not have people like me talk about how terrible your restaurant is, you did not do a good job.
Keep trying.
So, funny. I don't know. I think the whole drone thing is pretty, you know, it's happening. It's moving. People are getting creative. It's unfortunate when, you know, companies that aren't the best go and do stupid stuff like this, but it happens. It happens even to the best of companies. So, did you hear anything? Have you been following at all about the Sony hack drama?
I know a little bit about it.
So,
I know apparently North Korea took credit, but they didn't do it, but they approved it or something like that.
Yeah, so the story is right now, basically Sony got hacked. A bunch of stuff got stolen from them. Yeah, like you said, North Korea kind of took credit, and then they backed off of that, said, oh, no, it wasn't us. And the rumor is that it's actually, like, North Korean hackers who aren't government. They're not part of the government, but they were encouraged by the government. And it's complicated. Nobody really knows, and North Korea doesn't really want to take credit, but and then there's other times where they've come back and said, like, there was another statement what they had. They were like, we don't really know what Sony Pictures is. We don't know why they got hacked. And frankly, we don't care. Like, so it's confusing exactly who's responsible for all of this. One of the parts that got blamed, or the explanation for why North Korea would have done this, is because Sony is releasing a movie later this month called The Interview, with Seth Rogen and the Green Goblin.
That's right.
And where they kill the North Korean dictator and dear leader. And so they were angry about that. And I'm still going to go see the movie in order to sock it to the North Koreans, doing my part to undermine dictatorships. But it turns
sure
out there's just
exactly
a bunch
going.
Of other stuff that was part of that leak, part of that steal, like a bunch of emails between executives and stuff, and information about just their general, like, policies. There were social security numbers, health information, just tons and tons of information. And
awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's one of the things that's been said that was like, that's kind of disconcerting, was once the hackers were in, the view is that it was just shockingly easy to snoop around. Because it's like a lot of these emails have their own private passwords, right? It wasn't like they got into this server and then they were just, you know, able to get into everything automatically. No, there's a lot of layers of protections. But what they would do is they would store the passwords, like these huge password lists, in like plain text files on the server. So they were able to go and get just tons of, just classic, terrible security stuff. And, you know, and so once they were in, it's just they've been able to snoop around. There's a big concern that whoever was snooping around is still snooping around. And so it's like their London offices are currently sending information around with pens and paper because they don't know who has access to what. And there's like some pretty, you know, pretty damaging. There's some pretty damaging stuff going on where they're talking about, like, it's making fun of celebrities. Like, there was some racial stuff around the president, which was, you know, not cool. There was, just a lot of really, like, wow, these are the things that you really never want to come out. Not to mention, like, the actual health, like, information that got released is out there now. And these executives are just open to the world, you know, it's bad news. And I know a lot of people have been talking about the idea of, like, you know, learning that what you can and can't say in emails. And it's funny because I think about it a lot whenever this sort of thing happens and sort of run through my mind of, you know, do I say anything online that I would be shocked and horrified if anybody found out about? And it's amazing how much the answer is no to that question. Just nothing goes online that shouldn't. Nothing, you know, like, I don't say things in email that I don't want people to know. I'm a little more liberal, I guess, when it comes to, like, making phone calls, like, and actually talking to people. But I probably shouldn't be. There are things, though, like conversations that I've had where I've started the conversation on the phone and just said, you know what? I actually don't want to have this conversation on the phone right now. I got to wait till I can see you in person, which seems crazy that, like, even, you know, I've already been affected by the state of this, but it's, you know, because, you know, you talk about the NSA as being this big problem, but, man, that's, like, that's not even necessarily the worst of it. Like, at this point, it's just your own security apparatus.
Yeah, the NSA is at least going to keep it a secret. I mean, they might come after you, but they're not going to make anything public.
Right.
They won't. It'd be a different type of embarrassment.
Yeah. It's a different type of problem, and, Sony Entertainment not having a good week. That being said, the rest of Sony's not having a bad week. So Sony made this big announcement that they basically are turning to the PlayStation 4 as a top priority because it's the only thing making money. And they're like talking about, you know, I brought that article to you last week about how the PlayStation was marketed 20 years ago when it was launched.
Yeah.
And sort of using London as this place to do early viral marketing type campaigns and stuff. And basically, they had to do that because Sony wasn't paying attention. They're like, it was this small project. It was a small group. It was this tiny little piece of the entire puzzle. And the execs just didn't care. Like, and it's interesting reading all these old stories now about, like, what it was like in the beginning and what the PlayStation 2 was like and how things evolved with the PlayStation 3. But with the PlayStation 4, like, the execs are finally sitting there and going, so maybe we should find out how this all works. And they're not going to treat the PlayStation 4 like a black box anymore. That's really cool in some ways, and that's terrifying in others. Because executives that have no idea how something works, getting involved sometimes ruins it. You know, that's a classic, a TV show, radio show, movie director is amazing. Just crazy great works of art that people are getting really excited about. And then the executives start to realize that something's happening. So they step in and decide to tell the artist, director, creators how to make it appeal to a larger audience so they can take it to the next level, thereby ruining it. But at the same time, if you get the right leadership in the right place, and sometimes it really does, you know, allow that piece of art to, you know, hit that next level. But there's things like Project Morpheus and their whole 3D environment that the top guys in the PlayStation area of Sony are saying, yeah, like, it's great to have them there because there are these projects that we're taking on that cost a lot of money to develop, and they're basically like, yeah, go for it. We're behind you 100%. So
it's cool.
You know, it is very cool.
So we're gonna expect to see bigger, better things from the PS4. Or not.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of I feel like if you were an executive for the PlayStation 4, I'm just saying it. I feel like it would be a requirement or a required part of your job would be like you have to game for at least an hour a day.
Yeah, like, I feel like
that is what you do. Play by yourself, play with others, but you got to be playing. You just got to whatever. What game do you want? What are you interested in? We'll give it to you. I don't know. I just feel like that should be a part of it.
I agree.
Get on the PSN and try to figure it out. Be that guy. It's okay.
Yeah.
Go shoot some zombies. It's all good.
I completely agree with that. So part of their whole 20th anniversary promotion thing, they've been launching these classic PlayStation 4s. They're classic themes. They have that kind of Oogie off gray color that the original PlayStation came out. They've launched PlayStation 4s in that color. Yeah. With
that's really cool.
Yeah. And for a limited time, they reopened this PlayStation shop downtown London. It was like an original PlayStation shop that was there, and so they reopened it, and they went in and they like just put a bunch of 90s nostalgia all over the place, and like original PlayStation games that you could buy, and all sorts of just kind of cool 1995, 1994-ish PlayStation memorabilia that you could go in and buy. But part of their deal was they had a bunch of these limited edition PlayStation 4s. And for the first 94 of them, they didn't cost $199. They didn't cost, you know, like the normal ones are, I think they're $400. The, you know, it makes sense to do it for like $199.40. They took it one step further. They're selling them for $19.94. Pounds, sorry, and 20 quid, which is like $30. I'd still wait in line for it. But you had to like go to the actual shop. I don't know, it's cool. It's just they've been really like very nostalgic lately. Especially with the, you know, the big bosses coming on and saying, yeah, we kind of like what you guys are doing. The last piece of Sony PlayStation news is the despite all this good news for PlayStation, the Xbox One finally outsold the PlayStation 4. We kind of knew that was going to happen this month, but Microsoft finally came out and like, yeah, it definitely happened this month. It only took them dropping the price of the device by $150, so it would cost less than the PlayStation, and bundling it with games, which effectively dropped it another $50. So I'm sure that's cutting into their profits a little bit. but they finally are on price alone beating the PlayStation 4, which is kind of incredible that it took that much. But
wait, well, so now they tried the value play and that didn't work out. So now they cut the price. Done.
Yep.
It's easy. Of course, you don't need to be. So, you don't have to have a marketing degree to cut the price. So, you know, they're overpaying somebody there.
Yep.
All right. Wow, dude. Sony. All right. Switching gears. Let's see here. Got to write my note. That's a dramatic pause right there. Postmates. Has formally launched an API, which you're like, all right, big deal, except for what Postmates does.
All right.
They are a delivery company. You need new sheets? You want a burrito? This company will bring them to you.
Yeah.
Same day delivery, sometimes same hour delivery.
Whoa.
Boom. Yeah. So that's their thing. You know, they're big, I don't know. It's kind of, they think of it as Amazon Prime for the now kind of delivery stuff. So you need like an iPhone 5 charger, boom, they'll do it. Need 3 tacos, boom, you'll get it. Ibuprofen, boom, you'll get it. It tends to be used for food and alcohol deliveries.
Yeah, I'm gonna say,
but their idea is to figure out can they expand that? And right now they're in San Francisco, and I believe they're in New York and maybe Chicago and a few others. I don't fully remember. So you could probably try it out. I cannot, because Portland's not even cool enough to make the list yet. But what they've now is they've opened up this. Go ahead.
I can't. I know because I'm not part of their delivery area. But I'll let you finish the story. But I have to interject some background when you're done.
Totally. No, that's cool. So, anyways, they've released an API, and so the idea is to let other companies start to use their service. So you just kind of build it into your website. I don't know, it could be a t-shirt website, right? And someone orders a t-shirt and you're like, let's get it to them now. And you can send it to them now. You know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what would also make sense. So, well, HP's got like the snap photo thing where, could you imagine, you take a picture and within the hour you've got a physical copy of it there, which I realize that you could just print it in like 5 minutes and have a copy, but, you know. So that's kind of their idea. And by opening up the API, they're hoping to be able to expand and get bigger and start to take advantage of some economies of scale. And it's kind of an interesting idea. Go ahead. Backstory.
So I actually am friends with friends who are involved in these this company and in competing companies. And just happens that, you know, I live in the Valley and I run with these sorts of people. But one of their competitors.
Bragging.
One of the competitors, and I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I was trying to find it.
Let's get him on here. Let's get him on the podcast. He can tell us why they're so much better than Postmates. Okay.
Well, so I got to tell you the story, James. So they started in Chico, and they're trying to do this the legit way. But the whole premise was they had this brilliant idea if you could order things with an app. And so they started doing this like web backend thing. The thing is, like, you'd order, can I get 3 burritos? And then they'd charge extra for the delivery. And then there was also, like, an option to give, like, a tip. And there were certain tip allotments that were pre, like, you could tip this much, or you could tip this much, or you could tip this much. And, like, if you selected one of those, like, tip areas, there was an unstated agreement that your burritos would come with additional products that might make you want the burritos once consumed. additional products. How do you describe this podcast? It's a clean podcast, so I'll leave it at those vagaries. But you know. The extra tips were in like $20 denominations if it's not clear enough. and that was like the whole premise. That's how it got started. So they would bring you everything you need for a Friday night. but they realized there was actual money in the idea of like ordering stuff for delivery, and they decided to go more legit. And so they're, you know, part of this whole on demand type ordering stuff. I thought that was funny. I don't know if being a clean podcast, I'm not sure. I guess we could try to bring them on, but
I don't know. I think clean is more around language, but interesting. We'll talk about that. All right, so Postmates, they're starting to grow, and I think we're going to see a point where the delivery. Yeah, that definitely seems to be the next ground zero for online shopping competition.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, how can we get it to you faster? Faster and faster, faster, more efficiently, cheaper. And we're just seeing it. And so they're one of them in the space. Another place where there's a ton of competition is in the cell phone market.
Oh, baby.
And so your team, T-Mobile.
Yeah.
They have launched $100 two-line family plan with unlimited data.
I love it.
What are you paying a month for your unlimited awesomeness?
About $20 less than that.
Okay. So, all right.
So, you gotta find somebody if you're
who also is on T-Mobile.
You what?
You gotta find someone who's also on T-Mobile so that you can... get it for $30 cheaper than what you're currently paying.
Bind myself to another human being as I jump around the dial.
Just saying.
The whole point of this, and I really, it's funny, because I actually thought long and hard about
just
this.
Get married sooner.
Because when they did their 4 lines for $100 plan, which gave you like a 10 gig bucket or something, which is just laughably small for me. I had friends ask me about it, so I kind of thought about it, and I was like, you know, maybe there is somebody. Like, I think our dad pays like $35 a month. Even if I just went to him and said, hey, how about you keep paying the same, but you get unlimited data, then, you know, I can drop.
Yeah.
That would drop my cost if we did that. And I've got no, you know, dilemma staying with our dad, except like the whole point, the whole premise of this all along has been the ability to just jump around and kind of be on my own. And, you know, without a female significant other to be grinding on me to you know, let's save money.
Tether you down.
Exactly. I'm a late 20 something year old living in the Bay Area. I got no reason to save money at this point in my life. Let's have freedom and fun.
Right.
And so
of course
I, you know, I don't know. Maybe if I found somebody who was on a similar wavelength to me and just kind of was all right with the fact that I might just ditch them all of a sudden, I wouldn't mind doing it. Because at this point, nobody else is really challenging. But that, you know, I've already spent an awful lot of money to have to be not tethered to anybody. And it just seems counterproductive to...
Okay.
Fair
enough. Well, I don't know. I thought it looked interesting to me.
But no, it's good. I mean, like...
They're like, it's T-Mobile, dude. If you're not in one of the big areas, not worth it.
My... one of my coworkers, that day, when they announced this, called up T-Mobile, and 5 minutes later, it switched over to that plan with him and his wife. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's
well, that makes sense.
You know, it's a huge deal. It's just for me in particular, it doesn't make sense, but it's a good move, and it's a heck of a good deal for that. And it's great for them, because just like for me, I'm their worst fear, right? Somebody who has the ability to just move on all of a sudden. You know, the moment somebody better competition comes on, I'll just jump over to them, and T-Mobile has to beat them. Whereas if you got somebody that you're already tethered with and they don't want to move, but you do for whatever reason, you know, it just gives them one more tether to keep around their business and expect it to stay. So,
right.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Also good stuff is a company called the Happy Home Company. and so the idea is around home maintenance. I think it's interesting. You know, the writers, he starts it off with, I've never owned a home, but that's mostly because I make a journalist's salary while living in one of the least affordable cities in the world. But also, I really like the fact that I can call my landlord or superintendent whenever something breaks because it's their responsibility. All right, cool. So that's who's writing about this. But the idea behind the Happy Home Company and their app called the Home Manager. I don't know what it's called. It's super helpful. I recognize that, but oh well. Their goal is to take the headache out of home maintenance. So they say one of the issues that you might have as a new homeowner is something breaks and you don't even, or you know something's wrong, but you don't know what. I know for me, the example is pretty straightforward in the car where it might be like, it's not turning on. Okay, there are a lot of reasons why it may not be turning on. And you just may not even know. You may not even know how to diagnose what's going on. So, what this app does is, you may have like a pipe leak. There we go. There's a home example. And you're like, I don't know where the leak is. I don't know how to stop it. I don't even know if this is a plumbing issue or is it, I want to say it's pretty straightforward, but you know what I mean? Or your roof is wet. I don't know. Maybe that's a plumbing issue. Maybe it's a roofing issue. There's water getting in somehow. I'll eventually get a good example. So what you can do with this app is pretty cool. You can take pictures of what's going on, try to describe it the best that you can, and then you send it to them. And then they have someone who actually like looks at it, and they'll tell you, okay, here's what we think the problem is, and here's who you need to call. Here's a list of recommended contractors or handymen in your area. That can help you. That we have verified to be good.
So they're basically like Home Depot, but without selling you anything. That's kind of cool.
Well, it's $99 a month to use the app. So, yeah, they charge you.
That's not nothing.
The idea is, you know...
Maybe I'm just a bad example because I tend to be curious about things like that. We grew up with a dad who was very handy around the house, and I'm having engineering training. But that seems like an incredible amount of money to be charging for that service.
I'm trying to figure out, like, the issue has to do with how many problems you have. You know, if you're using that thing 2-3 times a month, okay, worth it. Or let's say that you are, that you are a property manager or something, and you've got a whole bunch of units, and you've got other managers looking at the different units, and you don't want to be that bottleneck that's always telling them, here's what needs to happen. You know, this can help them diagnose it or something. I don't know. It does seem like a lot. I don't know. If you do it as a one-time fee, I feel like people aren't going to be as interested in doing it. I could see they're charging contractors, you know, for the referral.
They're not, like, how are they not? You know, like, that seems to me like that's a more promising capitalization. You know, like, I could see doing something like a micro purchase solution where you go, you know, it's 99 cents per question. You know, something very, very small. People are willing to do it, but they're also, because what you want to avoid, I think, from their perspective, is just being inundated with, where does the fork go in my dishwasher? You know, stupid questions. Like, really, really, you're just wasting our time and money, because that's the one part of the thing nice part about the $99 is you're going to get people who are serious, really have questions, really don't know what they're doing. And they're really willing to shell out for it. I think, you know, there's a certain price point.
It's $10, right? I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm going to say. I was going to say, I feel like that's too expensive, and maybe, like, you'd say your first couple of questions are free. And then we go to a per question pricing, or, I don't know. I just feel like that's a lot of money for that service. And like I said, maybe I'm just completely the wrong audience. Maybe, you know, maybe there's somebody out there who I can't even imagine. I just can't even imagine. I don't know anybody who would.
So they include an email in here from a customer. And it says, for me, the Happy Home Company is a lifeline. They're the people I call for when things break, and things definitely break. I've called them to help fix a really loud garage door, a broken door handle, and a variety of small emergencies. In addition, for me, the HHC is a proxy for finding trusted service people. I trust HHC, so I trust the people they send. For example, I called them when I needed to find someone to inspect a retaining wall. I wanted an independent consultant who could provide an unbiased opinion on whether it needed replacement. I have no idea how to find someone who would do this or how to evaluate whether they're good. The HHC found and recommended a soil engineer who came out and provided a thorough examination of the retaining wall for me. So that's what they're offering.
I will say
that
this.
That was a first-time homeowner.
You and I have our dad, who is very much that, kind of knows all of those things, but more importantly knows how to find people who work in that, you know, who... He can give a lot of advice in that area, and especially for me, like, living here. A lot of times we'll just say, dude, oh, I'll do it. But, you know,
awesome.
but I'm not saying that they don't have a valuable service, because I think they do. Yeah, I think it's a good – I think it's a really good idea. I just think it – like I said, it just sounds like it's incredibly expensive. I don't know if that's worth $1,200 a year. And you know, and maybe I'm crazy, but, you know, maybe I'm way off. Maybe they've done market research and they're right. That just seems, like I said, just seems way, way more than.
I don't know. I'm in your boat. I mean, I'm at a point now where I'm not going to pay for that stuff. I'll spend the time searching YouTube instead. Side thought. So, fun little fact. Our father actually called me today to ask how to do a repair. Booyah! Because I had recent experience in doing it, and he was like, I just want to make sure that I'm going to do this the right way and don't mess it up. Like, dude, I'm on
nice.
This. It was pretty sweet. Pretty sweet.
And the master becomes the apprentice, or however that goes.
Yeah, sure. Sure. He probably would have figured it out on his own. I saved him 20 minutes of looking it up on YouTube.
Exactly.
But anyways, interesting company idea. You know, being in the landlord space, I'm obviously inherently interested in it. But moving right along, Glassdoor has come out with their annual best company to work for in the United States list.
Yeah.
Number one, it's Google.
Get.
It used to be Google Twitter. It. That's Google. They're the best.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Let's see here.
Where does HP
Facebook
rank?
Is number 13. It's somewhere else on the list. Adobe is number 18. Apple's number 22. LinkedIn is 23. Zillow is 33. And, yeah, that's all the ones we care about.
You know, it's funny. I read a really interesting article today.
Go ahead. Dude, there's something up with your audio. You cannot hear me. It's really annoying.
I know.
But that's okay.
Anytime I talk, you completely go silent.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's always happened. Sometimes,
sorry,
I think because of delays and stuff, it's worse where we talk over each other. But I regularly don't hear half of what you say.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I read an interesting article this week about talking about engineers and hiring engineers and just the argument of like perks don't work. They're the last 1%. Nobody goes somewhere because of the perks. If you've ever watched, there was a TED talk where they talked about, or no, maybe it was one of those like drawing whiteboard ones. I can't remember, but it's about what motivates people and how extra pay doesn't motivate. After a certain point, extra pay doesn't motivate people, and that pay rate is actually very low. What motivates people are things like self-actualization and real challenges and things like that. And it's interesting when, you know, you ask the question of why is Google the number one place to work? And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they've kind of got their, you know, laboratories, their laboratory system where they just, there's all sorts of projects you can work on. And there's still a lot of creativity and autonomy given to their workforce to try stuff and to fail. And whereas Apple, I think you'd expect the world's largest company to rank a bit higher on that list. But they're so much more about like the top down, you know, very, very vertical. There's not a lot of autonomy to go and try different stuff. And therefore, if you're in the right position in the company, you get to exercise a tremendous amount of creativity. But pretty much nobody's in that position except Johnny Ives. And I'm sure he's very happy with his job. it's interesting when you look at these and where, you know, who ranks where. And with that sort of idea that, you know, what does it take to be one of the best places to work? And a lot of it is just autonomy and in self-actualization and other cool big words that, you know, whatever. Oh, it's interesting.
A lot of pay too. Come on, let's be honest.
Yeah. But that was the point of that's the point of all these studies is that pay doesn't make your job. It actually acts as a demotivator. Motivators and dismotivators. Incentives. If your primary incentives and disincentives are financially based, we won't give you a bonus if you don't hit your goals. We will give you a bonus if you do. Then people actually actually tend to perform worse after a certain pay grade, which pretty much anybody on working at any of those companies make. And you know, basically it's like after that point, it's all about the ability to feel like you're doing something and your life has meaning. Like that's what it boils down to, whether or not people actually like their jobs. And if they're fully exercising the fullness of their abilities, which I think is interesting and good to think about as you look for your next job. So this is a complete 90-degree turn, like pretty much everything in this show has been so far. Bose products are back in Apple stores. The breakup was short, and like, you know, like many college breakups, it happened. There was a fury of finger pointing, and then they all got back together after deciding that they couldn't live without each other. And we'll see how long that lasts. But now for just in time for the Christmas series or season, if you want to buy your Bose noise canceling headphones from Apple stores, you can, which is very nice of Apple to open their stuff up again. No real word on what the drama.
If you had unlimited funds, what set of headphones would you recommend? If price wasn't a problem, issue, what set of headphones would you recommend? Just for listening to music. Doesn't have to have a microphone or anything on it.
That's a tough one. Bose sound quality is very high, but they're ugly. I hear the Bluetooth Solo Tube by Beats is actually a very, very, very quality sounding pair of headphones, and their Bluetooth is impeccable, good battery life. I think it's the Studios that are the really good ones. They're still a little bit heavier on the bass than everything else, and I don't know, man. I don't know. Your super high-end headphones, every once in a while I look around there, but they're always priced at prices I can afford but can't justify, which is really that bell. It's that belt that is super annoying. Because if I can't afford it, I don't even have to. I can just fantasize all day about it. If I can justify it, I just do the research, buy whatever I want. But if I can afford it but can't justify it, spending time trying to study it is really a bad thing for me to do, because you know what I'll do? I won't justify it, and I'll still buy it because I want it. So honestly, I would probably – honestly, at this point, I'd probably go with the Wireless Studio by Beats, just because they're hip and cool and the sound quality is pretty decent. And I can't tell the difference anyways.
Are only $342. They're on sale right now.
Ooh, they're on sale, I was going to say.
You get a 12-hour rechargeable battery. You can also take calls on them.
Yeah.
Because it has a built-in mic.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
They're nice headphones.
Interesting.
It's funny from a style perspective. I love the headphones I'm wearing right now. I get comments on them all the time. My Aviators by Skull Candy. I like Skull Candy stuff, but they also make a lot of distance by being hip and cool and not having great sound quality. Ooh. So speaking of cool hip products, Android Wear officially is getting third-party watch face support, which is kind of a big deal because that's been mostly where they've been dealing with their legal problems lately. And it'll just be interesting to see now when people put copyrighted, you know, patented watch faces on the store, how Google deals with that, if they are going to go through and try to get rid of those beforehand, or if they're just going to wait for takedowns. And, it'll be interesting to see how that works. But definitely a step in the right direction. And I think Apple will have to follow suit relatively quickly, aka the next 5 years. There was a big announcement about stretchable artificial skin for prosthetics. It's actually not a huge deal in that the article makes it sound like it's the biggest deal, but this is not the first technology of its kind. Effectively, what it is it's a polymer plastic that you can wrap over a mechanical hand that does pressure sensitive feedback, and it does really, really sensitive stuff, so they can even extrapolate like temperatures and moisture and things like that, but mostly pressure sensitive, so that you can get tactile feedback from your prosthetics. It does nothing to talk about how you'd actually interface that into a nervous system. And it's not the first of its kind, but the big deal is it's much more affordable and much more durable. So you're heading in the right direction. I think first you'll see this sort of technology be incorporated in just general purpose robotics. You'll cover robots in skins so that when they get touched or hit or temperature raises, you'll be able to sense that and deal with that information. And so you can get much more accurate pressure sensitive information about, you know, instead of having like the fingers have sensor feedback, so when you're grabbing things at the right location, you can feel it. All of a sudden, the entire articulating hand becomes pressure sensitive. So if it gets like hit, or if it touches something with the back of the robotic hand, now you can sense that information too, and it's just a very, very dynamic sensor, which is kind of cool. And then the last thing that was announced Wednesday was Apple and IBM launched their first set of new enterprise apps. And so we've been kind of talking about that for the last couple of months, and that going down, and this is the first big thing, and none of it seemed applicable to me, but it's kind of exciting.
Well, that shouldn't be a surprise. It's all enterprise, and you're a small business.
Yeah, well, one can hope.
Yep, one can. So there's another app. I must have been on the real estate kick. Called Who's Your Landlord?
Yeah, seriously, man.
Essentially, the idea behind it. I know. Essentially, the idea is it's like Rate Your Professor or something like that website. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it is.
We're in school. Yeah, imagine that, but for landlords.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's the idea. You can see if a landlord is a good one or not. Works, you know, probably especially well for school areas. But yeah. Who's your landlord?
I like that. I like that a lot, because it's, you know, it kind of goes back to that pet theory of mine that, you know, when you're looking for your next job, you shouldn't be looking for what you do. You should be looking for who you do it with. Because ideally, you know, when you get hired, any self-actualizing, self-empowered individual will be looking for a job that shifts over time. Even if you're in a company, you're looking for raises and stuff. So the big question shouldn't be, you know, what do I want to do? It's who do I want to do it with? And who do I want to do it for? Who's your boss going to be? Who's your leader? How are they going to lead you? You know? And so, and that same question, you know, it's like, man, you can find a sweet house and stuff, and that can, you know, with low rent. But if you have a nightmare of a landlord who doesn't fix your stuff or is constantly bothering you or whatever, you know, that's as important as anything, I think, in your happiness and satisfaction with where you live. And yeah, man, that would be it's interesting. That's a good idea. I'm surprised there's not like a general purpose rate your boss sort of thing that's taken off, because that seems like it would be pretty. See, this goes back to my, you know, the whole community episode of an app that lets you rank people's, you know, what's it called? Their reputation. What's my rep? I know that's. I don't think that ends well, but at the same time, it'd be useful information to kind of know, oh, he's the best boss in the world. He's, you know, really good and awesome, and I love him. Versus, oh, he's the worst.
To clarify, you were referencing that episode from the community, right, where they ranked each other?
Yes.
Gotcha. Which did not end well. I agree. It was hilarious. But yeah. there's a part of me that's wonders too, like, you know, when you're rating your boss, you kind of got to be careful. You know, I think about like this one, it works great for student housing because you're there for a year, maybe a four, and you're done. So there's an amount of turnover. That's not always the case with the boss. And it might be obvious for the boss to figure out who it is. And then you think about companies like Glassdoor, you know, they're a little more general. They don't obviously go to the boss level, but they'll at least give you insight into the company. Which is a lot better at being anonymous. You know what I mean? You know, if you were to rate your boss, it'd be kind of like, not to say it would be obvious that it was you, but, you know, and the repercussions could be huge.
Yeah, well, you got to be smart when you're online. You know what? It's funny. I wish so much we could have, like, just a flood of these types of apps. Like, I have apps like I have questions like this all the time. Like, and these are, like, the perfect ideas for this sort of app. Like, I want to know, okay, so this is a ridiculous one. Have you ever heard of, like, the idea that the psychologists do studies on this, and girls tend to do this more than guys in huge numbers, to the effect of most girls do this and most guys don't. But it's the whole idea of having a plan B, a back pocket boyfriend or husband. You know, if it doesn't work out with the current guy, who's up next? And there are some girls that you're like, they got a boyfriend, you know, the relationship's going well, but yeah, you're kind of curious, like, you know, if I were to push a little, am I your plan B? That would be nice to know. Like, should I back off right now and just say, hey, he's one, and because she's not even interested in me if he wasn't on the table? Or should I let her know, hey, you know, if you're ever looking around, the option's on the table. This would be, that would be a great app. But they're like, how would you even go about that? Like, I want these apps. I want to know what people are thinking. That's really what I want. That's my hope. I can't figure out how to, like, because it's the anonymity. You need the anonymity.
Man, you in control.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not healthy. Don't spend too much time thinking about this.
Okay. I won't. Anyways, that's the app. Who's your landlord? Pretty interesting. I thought this next one was very interesting. Amazon is going to let developers publish HTML5 web apps on their Fire TV and Fire TV Stick.
Huh.
And
that is very interesting.
Yeah, I know. I saw that and was like, seems like a really good idea. I would be interested in, I mean, I don't know. I saw that and went, man, what if, I'm just going to put it out there. You know, and Chrome, the Chrome Stick, I mean, essentially, since it has that browser, already allows that as well. And then it was like, man, all Apple TV needs to do is add Safari. And they've got it too. And I don't know, I saw that and went, huh, that's a good idea. And it completely makes sense.
It does.
Gotta write my notes.
Man, I was gonna say.
Yeah, so I just thought it was. Go.
I'm really holding off this conversation about the future of these different devices because we are too close to our year end prediction show, and I have thoughts, man. I have growing thoughts, and I think
I'll hear them in a couple weeks.
I know. You will, but this is part of the whole thing. I mean, it's just the competition in this area is really, really, really suddenly heated up, and I think this next year is going to be big for it. And I'm afraid that Apple's sometimes slower response to this sort of thing might have longer term negative effects than they want it to. But
that's fair. We'll see. We'll talk more about it then. Yeah. All right, there's your teaser. Come back in a couple weeks. We'll talk about it. It's a cool startup. I think you would actually like it. And I put this on here specifically for you because I think you'll like it. It's called M. Taylor. Essentially, they make tailored shirts for men, except your mobile device is the tailor.
Hmm.
So you go through this process of you lean your phone or tablet, I guess, up against the wall, and then you spin slowly in front of it. And from that, it gets your measurements. Say, and it's actually like pretty darn accurate. And then you go to their website and you pick a shirt and they mail it to you. And it probably fits.
So it's not a cheap
and
shirt.
And then they go, well, you know, it's tailored.
That's a good point.
It starts at $69.
Actually, tailor shirt is not bad.
Yeah, but they you can get all sorts of custom fabrics and other stuff. If you put in the code, let's see, it's SDJOYDLQ. It's kind of random. It seems random. It's maybe not, but it seems random. You get $20 off. So,
oh well,
there you go.
It's fine. I'll totally buy. I need a fancy shirt for the near future. I have a couple of weddings and a couple of parties that I'm going to, and I've promised I'll wear a tie to the weddings, because one of my best friends from college married a girl and I didn't wear a tie to their wedding, and I think she hated me for an entire year until I basically said, look, I'm sorry for not wearing a tie to your wedding. I promise I'll never go to a wedding again without wearing a tie. And she she said thank you, and it was like it went from like she like barely acknowledged me to like had her over at a party this last Friday and we talked for a long time. Like it was a big deal. So evidently I got to figure out that part of my life, and this will help out. Thank you, M. Taylor.
Yeah, and then when people are like, oh wow, nice shirt, you'd be like, that's right, I bought it online with my phone as my tailor. Thought you'd like it.
I like it.
Thought you would enjoy it. So Facebook had some interesting news this week. They're helping out publishers. And I thought that this was just a great example of how much data Facebook has now. And they're like putting it out there for others to use. You know, so the way that it usually works is you have an article or something, a post, and it just kind of puts it out there, you know, and people who see it will see it, whatever. Now they've got a way to help you be more precise. So the first way is with interest targeting. So you might post something and, you know, they'll put it in people's timelines, right? What they might say is, I got this post, but I think it's really, I want to target a certain subset of my page like follower people.
Right.
And so you can get very specific about types of posts. Now, obviously, if they visit the page, they're going to see all of them. But you can get more specific about, here are the types of people who I want it to see. And they know that about people, not a big surprise. The other one is they can have a post end date. And so you can actually specify a time where it just stops showing up in people's news feeds. And so they just won't see out-of-date stuff. And so that works really well for more like events or contests or something like that. But then I thought the most interesting one of them all was smart publishing. Okay, so what this one says is, until now, it has been challenging for large publishers to predict which stories will resonate with their audience. Smart publishing is a new optional tool that identifies and publishes stories that are popular with people on Facebook. So, frequently shared links to your website can appear in news feeds for people who like your page. They won't appear on your page, but you'll have access to a new dashboard with insights to see the analytics, to moderate comments, and choose what you want to post on your page. So the idea being, this is crazy, you might have posted an article that starts to go viral.
Yeah.
That just, you know, seemingly random people are starting to, you know, share on Facebook. Facebook's going to go, hey, this is a popular link. And so they will start to automatically share that link for you to people who have liked your page. Because right. they know that you're the publisher of that piece of content. Because, you know, you register your URL with them, essentially.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. So they're essentially saying, yeah, this is popular, so we're just going to help it. We're going to push it to be even more popular going forward.
Huh.
Yeah, pretty interesting. They also got improved insights, but man, that's boring.
I like that because it's I know it helps both ideally, you know, both companies, you and Facebook. They want more people to be interested in, you know, looking at their site to find valuable stuff, and you want to be posting valuable stuff. Sometimes Facebook's come out with policies where you're like, I don't know. How does this make sense? How does this make sense for me? But that's one of those ones where it's like, yeah, I can totally see how the advantage of both of them. And it's, you know, and Facebook realizes that the content is from their part, you know, basically this content is their partners and they're making sure that they see success too. It's cool. It's very interesting.
Yeah. 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 I already talked about the laptop.
Cool. So I already talked about Instagram passing Twitter. So
you did
up again.
All right. I think this article is like a week old, but whatever. So this was a Yahoo News Digest thing. So the Navy's tested a new laser and, it works. They can shoot things using lasers.
Freaking lasers.
Can you believe that? Future's now. They had this really cool video, which does not appear you'll be able to see on this webpage. Well, that's lame. Just search for Navy laser or something like that. And they can show it's this 30 kilowatt laser and, essentially it just destroys everything in its path, but it's super, they said there's a couple benefits about it. Number one, you don't have to reload it. It just kind of like, as long as batteries are charged, this thing will keep firing. And so yeah. You can do rapid fire. It's super, super accurate. And they showed a guy essentially with a game controller controlling this thing. And they said it costs like 59 cents per shot.
Wow.
Which is in stark contrast
to
missiles
huge.
That they normally... Yeah. And so they're like, so we could shoot a lot of this. We could just start firing. And yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool, yet scary. I'm glad they're on our side. new weapons that they have.
One of the things that's interesting about that... That actually is really great for weather stuff, because one of the ways that we can track like weather formations and just kind of what's going on up in the upper atmosphere is by shooting lasers into the atmosphere and then looking at how much disturbance occurs, and you can study the refraction of the light and stuff, and as it phases out to really see what happens to it deep in the atmosphere. But you need really powerful lasers to be able to do that. And so this is just kind of like, it's funny. It's actually, it doubles as a weather satellite. And it's the best in the world.
Well, they didn't show that in the demo, but
no, they didn't.
I believe it.
But it's definitely a useful byproduct of the ability to shoot boats out of the, I'm going to put piranhas with freaking lasers on their head. We'll call it Death Star. Okay, that's enough quoting Austin Powers.
So, just to kind of keep everyone in the know, Merkel, she is the chancellor in Berlin. For Germany, Chancellor of Germany in Berlin, gave a little speech. And I also think this was a week old, but whatever. I'm going to let it go. She believes that an innovation-friendly internet means that there is a guaranteed reliability for special services. Because these can only be developed, these can only develop when predictable quality standards are available. So, the premise being that she believes that there are certain special services that should always have the best connections and the fastest connections because these services are really important. And everything else should be in a, I don't know, we'll call it a slow lane internet. And yeah, pretty interesting. And she was like, and we're going to, you know, we're going to fight for this. And there's some people who are freaking out over it. They're like, whoa, wait a second. No, stop.
Well,
they're like,
are you saying?
No, go ahead.
One of the things that is interesting about this, in my perspective, is you got this problem. You know, it's the classic. It's actually exactly what's going on in the UK right now as well, with the whole you know, banning certain types of porn and stuff. Where it's like, you know, you talk about the, you know, it's censorship essentially, and you talk about and you know, it's like, well, yeah, I don't make porn. I'm not watching that porn. Like, this doesn't affect me at all. Like, why do I, you know, why would I care at all? But it's just general purpose censorship. And, you know, what governments always do when they to go too far is it always starts with these really kind of, yeah, it totally makes sense. It's a good justification. And it's, you know, we need to protect the children. We need to protect these, you know, these porn, you know, porn workers that are being forced into stuff that's dangerous and it perpetuates, you know, dangerous, you know, ideas. And you're like, yeah, okay, I get that. Like, I get that, yeah, well, probably it's a high and valuable goal. And just like Merkel is doing, it's we want to make sure that emergency services have, you know, have priority. And this kind of service has priority. But that's always how freedom is taken away. It's always starts with really, yeah, ideas that everybody can, you know, can agree to. And, you know, not to go immediately to Nazi Germany, at the risk of it, I should say. You know, it's that whole thing of first they came for the Protestants, but I wasn't a Protestant, so I didn't do anything. Then they came, you know, or I guess technically they came for the Jews. First they came for the Jews, but I wasn't Jewish, so I didn't do anything. And they came for the Protestants, and I wasn't a Protestant, so I didn't do anything. And the poem goes on for a couple of different categories of people and until it finally does, and then they finally came for me and nobody stood up for me because there was nobody left. You know, it's like that's how it always begins. You always start the fast lanes with the government comes in and says, yeah, okay, we'll, you know, we will decide what are truly valuable services. And everybody can agree, yes, it should be emergency services. Yes, it should be this, it should be that. And these things should have priority and they'll win because of that. But now all of a sudden the government has the power to decide who's a fast lane and who's not a fast lane. And at some point down the road, you start to get into the gray areas of, well, does this really, should they get priority or not? Is it really a critical service? And somebody finally just says, decides yes. And then finally somebody who's really not a critical service, but is very well connected, buys off a politician. And all of a sudden you're, you know, it's already out. You've already lost control. They already control the internet and control who wins and who loses. And they already control who gets a fast lane and who doesn't. So when Netflix finally just buys off the politicians in Germany so that nobody else can, you know, can play against them, who's going to be there to stop them? And that's the problem with this kind of stuff. And I know I tend to get behind that sort of a, no, it's, you know, equal priority to all. Especially with the idea that there's not enough bandwidth. Like, there is enough bandwidth for anything, any critical service you're talking about, focus on using less bandwidth. Don't focus on, you know, focus on there's other strategies. This to me is you're jumping to the wrong solution. You know, she cheated on you. That doesn't mean you go and kill the guy that she cheated on you with. That means you break up. Like, you're going for the wrong solution here, Merkel. Like, I don't know. I know, that's frustrating, but I don't live in Germany, so. Yeah. First they came for the Germans, but I wasn't German, so I didn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. That's why we're bringing it up here, so you can think about it, make your statements, convince others. Whatever. Okay, we teased this one a little earlier. Now it's time we get to it. So, Robin Hood. finally launched. I think I talked about this like a year ago, and they were supposed to launch in January, and they are now launching. It's a zero-fee stock trading app that's well-designed, and, you know, we went on and on and on about it. So what place are you in line? How many people do you have in front of you?
I got the email. I was very excited because I figured, oh, that's cool. I'm going to be able to do, I was like ready to do my first trade. I was like thinking, okay, how much money do I have aside? Can I buy an app? Like, I was honestly going to buy Lending Apple Club. Stock.
Yeah.
Just for the fun of it, because I can. And so I like very excitedly downloaded the app, was totally ready to do this, only to find out that this is the app. This isn't my invitation to use the app. There are still 40,000 people in front of me.
16,419.
So I'll find out before. You what?
It's just frustrating, man. Just frustrating. So still can't tell you how the app works, but it's available. Get in line. If you get in line today, there's only 481,000 people that'll be ahead of you.
Well,
no.
Don't.
No, that's not right. It's closer to 500,000.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing. This is kind of interesting. You're on your way to trading with Robinhood. Interested in priority access? Refer your friends to improve your spot in line up to 400,000. So if you're joining right now, you can't beat James and us no matter what. Yes. kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm still excited. I'm still just come on. I was really hoping that when I put this article on, I would have had access by now and could actually tell you about it, but whatever.
Yeah, me too. I will tell you this. I'm going to loan my money to people, and then as soon as I get access, I'm going to sell all my bonds or whatever they are, or my notes, and then I'm going to invest in the stock market where real people make money. Safe investments.
No, I'm just going to invest in tech IPOs just right out the gate. That's all I'm going to do.
Yeah, me too.
I do like the idea of just seeing, like, no, I own and stock of Apple and stock of Google. Which, their stock's like crazy expensive, right? Because that's the one thing you can do right now. You can track stocks. Yeah, Google's like $520. Jeez. Facebook's only 78. Remember when they were at like 15 or 19 or whatever it was?
Yes, I do quite well. Netflix is at 334, which seems expensive. 109 for Apple, so that's affordable. Finally.
HBQ is at 38.
Nice. That's affordable too.
Yeah.
Let's Skull Candy. Which one's Skull Candy? I can't remember. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They're at $9 a share.
Oh, dude, get in
I wanted
that.
To invest Support in them a long team. Time ago. I might actually do that just for the fun of it. No.
What is what's another one? I'm trying to think of like.
Man, everybody's down right now.
Who else would I invest in? Disney, DIS. They're at 91. Jeez.
Walt Disney.
We'll see. I haven't decided yet. How deep I want to get into this. I got other ideas.
Yeah.
You know, it's a balance on how you focus your time. Okay, so last one from me. Oh yeah, folks, we're still going. We got three more. We can do this. Actually, did you already? No.
Nope.
All right. So. Here's a little fun fact. AOL, believe it or not, is still in the dial-up business. And even funner fact, majority of their profits come from the dial-up business.
That's horror.
How nuts is that? Yeah, well, I mean, part of it makes sense for some of the stuff. They were interviewing this one lady where she's like, she lives in the middle of nowhere. And she's like, I don't have a choice. I have to use dial-up if I want to get online. And then they were talking to someone else where they were like, you know, this dial-up's whatever it is, $15 a month. And they're saying, in order to get broadband, it's like $50 a month. So no, I'll stick with my dial-up. There's part of me that's like, dude, if you knew what you were missing out on, you'd pay the extra amount of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. So hear about this. So, okay. So they've got multiple divisions within their, you know, AOL, I should say, has multiple divisions within their company. So they have a publishing, an online publishing business. Their profit was $17 million this last fiscal year. Okay. They also have a corporate division and ad sales group for third-party websites that lost $34 million in the quarter. I don't know how to interpret that. But anyways, but that's okay. They were in the net positive because, oh yeah, this is all quarter. Sorry. So last quarter, their online publishing made 17 with their corporate division and ad sales. They lost 34 million, but in their last fiscal quarter, they were still positive because they made $193 million in profits from their dial-up offers.
Holy cow. That is a lot of money.
The average money per subscriber that they make, it's $21.35 per month. And the average customer has been paying for 14.1 years.
Wow. That makes sense.
That's a business. That's a cow. You just milk that all day long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gives you time to mess everything else up.
You know, part of it, like I said, there's some examples where you go, okay, it's legit. There's somewhere they still think they need to pay in order to access their email, which is not true. That's a little more like, come on, guys. But, you know, they're not going to tell you that. You know, you figure it out. It is shrinking, though. It is getting smaller, but still around. They actually have hopes of, like, figuring out of, like, stabilizing it and actually growing it again by adding other services on top of it, like antivirus software and tech support and stuff like that. So they're like, yeah, we might get it to start growing again. Like, dial-up? Yeah. Really? Okay.
Yeah, man.
Good luck with that, AOL.
Yeah, they're, but, you know, it'll always be a niche, I guess. I mean, you know, like you said, I think there will always be a place for dial-up services. I am just surprised you'd go with AOL. I mean, I think it's out of just stubbornness, you know? It's not...
No, why not net zero? Jeez.
Exactly. I guess that's my thought, is that there's got to be, you know, like, for that one lady who needs dial-up, yeah, okay. But AOL, like, you only do AOL because you've been doing AOL. You know, if they go away, which they easily could, somebody else will fill that niche. I don't know. I mean... It's just embarrassing. Yeah, whatever pays the bills, I suppose, but...
Well, I mean, that's a big problem, you know? They've got such a big revenue thing coming in there, and I don't even want to know what the margins are. It's probably ridiculous. Where it enables them to take their time to figure out what they want to do and to lose money in other areas. Their back's clearly not against the wall. And so, you know, the chances of them ever figuring out something else is going to be tough. And again, it's not just innovator's dilemma. It's just they're comfortable. What's the rush?
Right, exactly. You know, our bills are being paid. I guess that's what's the truly embarrassing part about it. You know, it's like you make that comment, and it's kind of like, well, why? They're making money. They're doing their thing. You're like, yeah, but they were one of the great innovative companies during their heyday. I mean, they were doing stuff that nobody else was doing. And yeah, they had some wacky practices that, you know, with innumerable number of CDs that were required to kind of get people on board.
So many.
But you're seeing, it's a company that was, you know, this is what happens to BlackBerry, right? And it's that same sort of like feeling when it happens, where it's like, this is one of the, like I said, one of the great innovative companies of their heyday, and they're just, they don't do anything anymore because, well, why would we? They're just lazy. It's sort of like, it would be sort of like seeing that one cousin who was like a pro, like just a fantastic athlete in high school, who got injured in college. They're smart, they're clever, but they'd always lived such a fat, easy life that they decided, like, you know, I'll just go stay live with my parents. And now they're 40 years old, living with their parents, like not doing anything with their life because they never figured it. They never decided to try again, you know? And it's like, why don't you just try again? You still have a tremendous amount of talent. Like, and that's the frustrating part, is they're making $190 million, a year. Like, there's so many companies out there that would be desperate for that sort of a cushion, to try something new, to be adventurous, to go out and do something huge. And they're not. They're not being adventurous. They're not trying to pioneer anything. Like you said, they're just comfortable. And it's embarrassing. Like, you can't have the legacy that you had. And whatever. If there's going to be winners, there has to be losers. And I suppose AOL is going to be one of the losers.
Anyways. As long as the loser's not me, I'm cool.
I know, exactly. So Amazon, man, this is probably back in September, October, or something like that. I talked about this really random moment that kind of everybody woke up all of a sudden and realized that Amazon had baked an entire app store into their Android app, and which is against Google policies. Well, Google finally did something about it this week. They quietly removed the app from the Play Store. There was a couple other things that were going on with, like, how they were doing Amazon TV through it that Apple wasn't, or that Google wasn't thrilled about. But the big one was the secret app store. That wasn't such a secret anymore. And so I'm sure it'll come back relatively soon, but Google had to do something serious to convince Amazon to, hey, how about you stop breaking all of our policies and keep throwing egg on our face? Appreciate that. Thanks. So Amazon currently, if you're looking for the Amazon app for your Android and can't find it, that's the reason. And then just to,
It'll be back. Like you said.
Yeah. This is the bookends of this show. We started with some virtual reality. We're going to end with some virtual reality. So Oculus, the darling of the virtual reality industry right now, has acquired a hand tracking and an augmented reality company. The hand tracking company is kind of interesting. It's basically hardware that was like tailor-made for the Oculus. Straps right onto the face of the Oculus Rift, and then it looks at your hand, and they're using cameras and stuff to be able to do skeletal tracking is what they call it. And it's one of the coolest tricks. That's a different one. So it's just giving you this really powerful ability to bring hands into the virtual world. That was probably awesome. When I did my VR, my Oculus demo, I was using these cool kind of like gun handles, but that's what was being tracked in a bunch of different dimensions, and that was replicating your hands. That was very good. I mean, for playing. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a pretty high-quality experience for that immersiveness. But you don't get the articulation of the fingers and stuff like that. And this does. I mean, it's impressive watching the demo of them moving their fingers and actually interacting with things in space and having it happen on the TV. So that was very cool. And then the other one, the augmented reality one, is called 13th Lab. This stuff is designed to scan rooms. It's a computer vision augmented reality company. Their main projected focus is on creating 3D maps from image data. They've also done work in image detection and augmented reality. One of the coolest tricks, detecting a room and then replacing it with a one-to-one 3D environment, they've turned into a video game. And so basically it's a similar idea. And we've talked about this before on the show, that idea of being able to take a room, that your room that you're in, and then scan it all and then recreate it all. So like as you're moving through the room with your Oculus Rift on, the things in your room are still there. The bed is there. The table is there. The chair is there. The child is there. But now they're all, you know, they look like an alien world. So you don't run in, you know, so that you know it's there.
Because that's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. And they showed a demo where they're using iPhones to do the actual image projection, and they attach it to this like plastic gun thing, and they're running around their office building, and the office building is completely like, you know, they're just running around their office building like normal, but when you look through the screen on your phone, everything you see is this completely different world. And when you look at somebody else with the phone can detect a person there, the form of the person, and replaces them with like a soldier. And so like you can run around and shoot stuff and like do these like augmented reality video games. So, you know, incorporating that with the Oculus is huge. And it goes back to that whole thing of, you know, what was the advantage of them of being bought by Facebook? Well, deep pockets is the biggest thing. And, you know, back then we talked about the idea of the scalable manufacturing is very, very, very difficult on the budget that they were on. But with Facebook, it's possible. Well, this is another big advantage. You know, Oculus was acquired. Now Oculus can acquire. And so these really, really important instrumental technologies into making this a fully functioned suite of technologies, they can bring into the same house and really do some impressive stuff. So very exciting to see. And yeah. It's cool. It's awesome.
Dude, that's so cool. Hurry up and come out with this stuff, okay?
Right.
I will put off buying a television to get this instead.
Me too.
Yeah. No, you won't. You already got your TV and your PS4. No, this is cool, man. I like it. Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. Well, everybody, that's our show. Only took us, what are we at? 2 hours and 11 minutes.
Not bad.
That's not bad. All right, time to bring the dinging and beeps back. All right. Whole thing this entire time. You need to update this thing. All right, whatever. I'll do it later. So, everybody, thank you again for joining us and listening to all of the stories that we had to share this week. We really do appreciate it. So, again, thank you for joining us, and thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check out the show notes at furloughbros.com. All of the links to all of the stories that are there so that you can definitely find them. My name is James Furlow, and my, what was it, Grammy nominated brother is Matthew Furlow. So we will talk next time. Thank you.